You are on the Greco-Roman archaeological site of Olbia. You can see in front of you the first of the panels that will guide your visit. The history of this site goes back to the end of the 4th century before Christ, when the Greeks coming from Marseille founded the city of Olbia, which is today part of Hyères-les-Palmiers. The name of this small fortified colony meant the blissful. Its ports, strategically positioned to offer good surveillance of the coast on the sea routes to Italy, provided protection and a stopover for the trading vessels. In 49 BC, the defeat of the Marseillais, who were then allies of Pompey against Caesar, accelerated the Romanization of the region. The most important place at that time was Toulon. Olbia's old sanctuaries of Artemis and Aphrodite were desecrated and abandoned. Olbia's economic activity continued, however, and was even reinforced with the installation of shops and warehouses. The blocks of houses were reorganized, small thermal springs were created, the surrounding wall was partly reconstructed, and a jetty was built on the harbour. The city became a holiday destination, and vast therapeutic thermal baths were built by the seaside. The water was brought by aqueduct from the San Salvador stream. Around the beginning of the 7th century, the site was abandoned, probably in favour of the hill of the castle, until the installation of the first church in the 11th century, then the Abbey of Saint-Pierre de l'Almanar, St. Peter of Almanar at the beginning of the 13th century. After it was abandoned at the end of the 14th century, the site remained deserted until modern times. Archaeological digs began in the mid-19th century, but they were only carried out in a scientific manner in the middle of the following century.
To continue your visit of the site, our next meeting point is in front of the second panel at the top of the stairway on the right. Press pause, then relaunch the commentary when you arrive in front of panel number 2.
Here you can see Greek dwellings. Sheltered by the fortifications, close to 100 families of colonizers lived in identical sized houses, grouped in threes within blocks similar to the one you can see now. The layout usually included 4 rooms, linked by a central corridor at the end of which there was a roofless kitchen area. These rooms were used as living spaces, such as bedrooms or common rooms, but they were also used for storage and craftsmanship, like this block, where you can see a forge and a caterer. The city had 500 to 600 inhabitants. The colonizers, sent by Marseille, were at the same time sailors, fishermen and soldiers, who kept watch from the coast on Marseille's behalf. However, women also cultivated the separate parcels of land out in the country that were allotted to the colonizers along with their townhouses.
In order to continue your visit, go to the third panel. Press pause, then relaunch the commentary when you arrive in front of panel number 3.
Let's leap back in time to another era, to the days of Augustus, who is reigning in Rome. You are now in front of the main street and the shops lining it, with their long stone thresholds under a protective covering. In the block to your right-hand side that has been completely excavated at the back of a wine merchant shop opening onto the main street, you'll find a warehouse of amphorae filled with local and foreign wines, mostly Italian. The merchant's home was there too. Turn back to go round the area behind you, and on the left, you'll find panel number 4, dedicated to the Grecian public well. On your way, you will see the painted counter of a Roman shop, the equivalent of today's cafe or fast food joint, discovered in an excellent state of conservation and recently restored.
Press pause, then relaunch the commentary when you arrive in front of panel number 4.
The public well was located in the heart of the city, where the two principal streets crossed it. It was bordered by a small paved square where women and children filled their jugs with water. This well was particularly dug in the rock in order to reach the phreatic table, almost 8 meters underneath the surface. Its circular shaft, lined with stone blocks, is still intact. On the square-shaped edge, there are traces of the existence of a wooden drawing system using ropes. In Grecian times, this well might have been the sole point of water provision for the city, apart from individual reservoirs. This well was used and maintained regularly from the 4th century BC to the 3rd century AD. Then, it was filled up for an unknown reason, while the city continued to exist for 4 more centuries.
Now go to the 5th panel about the Greek sanctuaries. This panel is behind you. Press pause, then relaunch the commentary once you're in front of the 5th panel.
Like all Greek cities, Olbia completed its defense system with divine protection. 2 sanctuaries were thus discovered against the fortified walls in the west and the north. The sanctuary in front of you, which you can see as you enter the city, is the largest of all. It was built at the end of the main east-west way. A number of votive items were found on this site. Small statues and female figurines made of clay, as well as graffiti. These seem to evoke the cult of Artemis, primary goddess of the Phoenicians, the founders of Marseille. Today, it is difficult to imagine the monumental aspect of this sanctuary, which has only been partially excavated and which continues beneath the modern road. Built against the northern fortified wall, there was a 2nd sanctuary. According to the carved writing found on an entablature stone, the sanctuary was dedicated to Aphrodite, goddess of love and protector of navigators. When the Romans retook control of Olbia, these 2 sanctuaries were, it seems, desecrated and partly abandoned.
To continue your discovery of the site, go ahead to the 6th panel. Press pause, then relaunch the commentary once you arrive in front of panel number 6.
You are now in front of a small group of hot springs. Life in Roman times involved numerous places for social gatherings and entertainment, such as these thermal baths, which were built at the end of the 1st century BC. An example of the Romanization of Olbia, the thermal baths met the Roman demands for well-being and hygiene. After getting undressed in the changing room, apoditerium, the bather could warm up with sportive exercises in the adjoining gymnasium, or in the warm room called the tepidarium. Then he could go on to the steam room, the Laconicum, and then the hot bathroom, the Caldarium, before returning to the Tepidarium and plunging into the swimming pool of the cold bathroom, the Frigidarium. These thermal baths were real health centres where people could take part in physical activities as well as enjoy treatments or simply relax. The free population went there daily, and the baths also served as places to meet friends.
Now head to the 7th panel. You can press pause, then relaunch the commentary once you arrive in front of panel number 7.
Following in the steps of the first church that was built there in the 11th century, if not before, the Abbey of Saint-Pierre de l'Almanar, St. Peter of Almanar, was founded in 1221. It welcomed sisters of the Cistercian order until the end of the 14th century. From the elements of the abbey grounds, which covered a surface area of around 5,000 square meters, only the church, the cemetery, and the remains of the enclosing wall are known about and have been excavated. The first Roman-style church was originally composed of a unique nave, the current south nave. When the abbey was founded, it was extended by the addition of a second nave on its north side. The two naves offer a semicircular choir and a flat apse. Finally, in their current state, walls separate the two naves in order to create an isolated chapel, perhaps reserved for the nuns. The cemetery, attached to the church's apse, is composed of two parts: a 5-meter-wide artificial bank against the building, intended principally for the nuns' tombs, and another area further down. This second area was intended for the tombs of non-religious persons who worked and lived near the abbey. About 500 tombs have been excavated. There are a couple of vaults and stone casings, but the majority are graves made of earth. Some are still visible on your left-hand side after visiting the 8th panel.
Go ahead to the 8th and last panel. Pause the commentary one last time.
The Greeks of Marseille had built Olbia on a plateau, slightly slanted towards the sea, at the beginning of the sandy stretch linking the continent to the Gens Peninsula. They had set their harbour in the lagoon, enclosed by the two stretches of the Tombolo, in order to protect it from the eastern and western winds. They used it not only as a position of surveillance over the sea route to Italy, but also as a stopover or refuge in bad weather for boats travelling short distances. However, the Greeks developed a few relationships with the people who lived in the countryside. When Olbia managed to escape from the clutches of Marseille in favour of the Romans, the function of the city changed. The Ligurian pirates were killed by the Roman military flotilla, who soon installed a new military harbour in Fréjus. What took place then was what the official propaganda called Pax Romana, the Roman peace. Olbia then became a small trading and entertainment town, which took advantage of the development of agriculture, and most of all, winemaking in the inner lands, as well as an installation scheme for therapeutic therms.
Text by Sylvie Brunati-Abad, Toulon-Provence-Méditerranée, with its regional and European partners. Also in cooperation with the company AudioVisit.